Members, I'd like to call the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration to order. Representative Ward moves the minutes of our last meeting, which was January 14th, 2013.
Yep.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'd like to call people's attention to the committee procedures, which are in your folder, which lay out the conduct for the committee. They're in your save folder. You should have a look at those. And there is, we're following the precedent from the last cycle. And in at least in the committees in which I served, there was a 24-hour rule for committees. And we'll be using that here. Not that there are going to be a lot of amendments that I anticipate, but in case there are, there'll be a 24-hour rule. So for our next rules hearing, which I anticipate will be Monday afternoon, amendments then to the permanent rules would be due Friday. That's tomorrow.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dow.
That's not in keeping with the agreement that you and I had about how we were going to proceed on these rules. And I'm hoping that you will. I understand you want to have a 24-hour rule, but my understanding was that we were going to invoke that after we dealt with this this thing. And you said that you were going to give us over the weekend to talk about and talk together about these proposed rules, permanent rules for the House.
Thank you, Representative Dowd, and members. When we talked, Representative Dowd, it was in the context of the hearing that was going to happen today, which we delayed. So today is an informational hearing. We're going to meet on Monday afternoon. You and I talked again today, and I think we're going to talk again on Monday. But I do think that it would be important for amendments to be prepared for the permanent rules, and I think that they're due to the committee at 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And we will continue to discuss, and then people will have the opportunity to offer amendments or not based on our continued conversations. Thank you. And that is in keeping with the discussion that we had, as I recall it.
Well, we might be in disagreement on that, Madam Chair.
I understand that, Representative Dell. But thank you very much for calling it to my attention. All right, members, before us in your packets, you see draft permanent rules for the Minnesota House for the next biennium, as well as a memo from Patrick McCormick. These draft rules were posted for public viewing yesterday afternoon. We are going to have a hearing today that is just informational. Patrick McCormick is going to run through the proposed changes. We're going to have time for everybody to ask questions and get their questions answered in preparation for action next week. So I want to make sure that we recognize that there are not very many changes, but some cultural and substantial changes to how we do our work in keeping with the 24-hour rule that we saw used in committees last session. You know, I think that made the committee work more deliberative, and I think it'll make our floor work more deliberative as well. But I would like to first turn this over to Mr. McCormick. He can walk us through the document and the changes, and then we can do some Q&A before we wrap up today. Mr. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Patrick McCormick from the House Research Department. My source document today is the H Perm Rules 2013. I'm going to walk through the changes that are contained here. Just a few notes on procedure. The House has adopted temporary House rules on the first day of session, and those are in effect. As we go forward, we will adopt these permanent rules. The first step is the Rules Committee marking up this document as it wishes. This will pass to the floor, and then when it's reported to the floor, it's subject to amendment on the floor. And then after those amendments are adopted or otherwise modified, the permanent rules are the rules of the House for the remainder of the session and next session and for interims. They are amendable, however, and we have on occasion adopted amendments to the rules as we went forward. I'm going to walk through the stepwise and page-wise format, but I may have to jump around a little bit, so forgive me if I do. The first thing to note is on page one, we're striking the consent calendar from the order of business. You're going to see throughout this that we're striking the consent calendar, and later you're going to see we actually remove the consent calendar. So when bills are reported from committee, they will be reported to the General Register and no longer to the consent calendar. On page two, we have an amendment to Rule 1.03, And this is a clarifying amendment that reflects current practice. It's on line 2.4. The rule states that the House may advance or revert from any order of business to any other order of business by majority vote of the whole House. It says, in the new language, you say, either without objection or by majority vote. And that reflects current practice where people say, without objection, I'd like to move that we revert to. So this is a clarification, technical.
Mr. McCormick, if I can interrupt for just a moment, if people can turn their cell phones off, we won't have that feedback. That'll be buzzy through the hearing. I'd be grateful. Mr. McCormick, thank you.
Madam Chair, members, the next rule change is Rule 1.10 on page 2, lines 19 through 22. Here we have a new provision for the introduction of bills. In any annual session, the Committee on Rules and Legislation may designate a date after which a House file may not be introduced during that annual session unless approved for introduction by the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. This date must be at least 14 calendar days after the committee acts. So under this situation, for example, if the Committee on Rules moved today to state a date after which they cannot further, House files cannot be introduced, the earliest that could take place is 14 days from now. The next change is on page 4 of the rules. This is a change to the calendar of the day provision. I'm going to talk just briefly about this, but it is something that you have to interpolate with the new rule 3.33. But what this says is that in order to trigger a pre-filing amendment, requirement, which is what House Rule 3.33 will state, the calendar for the day must be established in accordance with House Rule 3.33. And in other words, if the calendar for the day is not done on the timeline envisioned in Rule 3.33, then there is no pre-filing requirement. And then it also goes on to say that in establishing the calendar for the day, the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration may establish additional pre-filing conditions which must be reported to the House. You'll understand this one better when we get to 3.33, but I wanted to point this out, that this is a sort of an off-ramp for pre-filing. If it's not done in accordance with, the calendar for the day is not done in accordance with the conditions in 3.33, there is no pre-filing requirement. Similarly, on page 5, you'll see the fiscal calendar provision has the same off-ramp. In order to trigger a pre-filing requirement, a notice must be given under Rule 1.22, the fiscal calendar, and that must comply with Rule 3.33. These two rules read together basically mean that you can't establish a pre-filing requirement for the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar unless you do the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar the way 3.33 says. If you don't do it that way, there is no pre-filing requirement. To continue onward, on page 5, you'll see where we actually strike the consent calendar, which will no longer exist. The next change is on page 10 of House Rules. And here, in two places, on line 10.2 and on 10.12, you see that we are removing the phrase seconded for a previous question motion and substituting the phrase properly supported. This is just a technical change to bring it in line with Mason's, which states that we don't second things in the legislative setting. It doesn't change the standard, which is 15 members supporting a previous question motion. The next change is also on page 10. This is a redaction or some removal of language from House Rule 3.14, the motion to reconsider. What is being stricken here is current language that allows a member to give intent of a motion to reconsider. Under current language, a member gives that intent of a notice that they intend to move to reconsider. The chief clerk must keep the matter until it is disposed of. This acts to hang bills up at the desk. And in talking to the chief clerk, I think that this was his suggestion that we take this provision out of the rules. So the next change is on page 11. It is the germaneness provision. You'll note on page 11, lines 16 through 17, we've added a specific germaneness standard for amendments to amendments, that on the House floor, an amendment to the amendment must relate only to the primary amendment, not introducing any new subject or any new purpose. This would prevent what's known as a bridge amendment, where you move from the amendment topic A to the amendment topic B, and this ties that new germaneness standard to the amendment having to be to the same subject and purpose as the amendment. I'm going to slow down a little bit now in talking about the new Rule 3.33. This is the pre-filing requirement. And the first thing to note is that it states, as a general proposition, that amendment on a bill that is being considered on the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar is out of order unless the amendment has been filed with the Speaker by 12 noon on the calendar day prior to the calendar day that the bill can first be considered on the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar. And a hypothetical might make this clear. If we're going to hear the tax bill on a Thursday, then the pre-filing deadline would be established at noon on Wednesday, the day prior to the day we're going to hear the tax bill. And an amendment that came in after 12 o'clock noon on the day prior to the day we're going to hear the tax bill would be ruled out of order because it was not pre-filed in a timely basis. Before this paragraph A can be triggered, certain conditions have to be met, and those conditions are stated in paragraph B on page 12. If you want to pre-file a bill successfully by 12 noon on the day before the deadline for filing amendments, number one, the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration has to have designated the bill.
Representative Lencheski.
Pardon me, can I interrupt?
Yes.
Representative Sanders and I are trying to figure out the technology of what's going on here. And Representative Sanders thinks maybe it's the Wi-Fi setting.
It could be on phones or just in general.
Did that do it? Because I know some members don't know that on their phones, if you just turn off your volume, that will not solve that problem. You have to power your phone completely off. But, you know, I think for the tape, we're just not sure what it is. But we're trying to help you so we can all hear Mr. McCormick. So thank you, Madam Chair.
I appreciate that, Representative Lencheski. It is a distraction and hard for the tape with that background noise.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, to successfully establish a pre-filing period, the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration has to designate the bill for inclusion on the calendar of the day, or a chair has to designate the bill an intention to place it on the fiscal calendar in advance of the pre-filing period. And secondly, the version of the bill that will be considered on these calendars has to be available to members. So let me provide a hypothetical, and I usually don't do hypotheticals, but I think this makes it clear. On Monday, the Ways and Means Committee reports the bill to the floor. And on Tuesday, that committee report arrives on the floor, and therefore the engrossed version of the tax bill that will be subject of debate is available to members. On that Tuesday, then, the Rules Committee meets and calendars the bill. Or on the Monday or Tuesday, the chair stands up on the floor and notes an intention to calendar the bill on the fiscal calendar. This establishes the pre-filing period. Because the calendar date is set for the Thursday of that week under this hypothetical, we've now reported the bill, we've now calendared the bill on Tuesday. On Wednesday at noon, all amendments to the bill have to be in. That's the pre-filing period. And as you'll see, there is an additional pre-filing period at 6 p.m. that Wednesday for amendments to those amendments. And so at 6 p.m. on the Wednesday, all of the amendments are pre-filed. All the amendments are pre-filed. They're made available online as soon as is practical by the chief clerk. Now we get to Thursday morning, and we are about to have a floor session, and we have a defined universe of amendments, the amendments that were prefiled and the amendments to the amendments that were prefiled. Now, there is one additional provision, which is contained in paragraph A. An amendment is not out of order under this rule if it is a technical or revisor's change to a bill or an amendment. On the day of the session, a technical amendment can be allowed by the presiding officer. Why would a technical amendment be necessary? Well, suppose that the very first amendment adopted to the tax bill reorganizes some sections in the tax bill and makes every other amendment unengrossable. The revisor could then prepare updated amendments that were engrossable, and those would be in order. The presiding officer would be allowed to say, well, this is just the A23, which was successfully prefiled, updated for the new pages and lines. Therefore, it's allowed to go forward. The prefiling deadline is going to require specific procedures to be promulgated by chief clerk, house research, revisor, and those are underway in draft form, and I'm thinking should be available for the committee to review on Monday. Under paragraph D on page 12, the speaker has the authority to do those procedures. Finally, the paragraph F provision on line 12.23 allows the rule to be waived or the deadlines in the rule to be extended for an individual bill or for all bills by the Rules Committee. Just to carry my hypothetical forward one final step, I'll start from the beginning. The tax bill is rolled out of committee out of Ways and Means on Monday. It arrives on the floor on Tuesday, and the committee report is accepted and the engrossment is available. It's calendared on Tuesday, and on that triggers a pre-filing requirement, which should be communicated as it's calendared in some format. That pre-filing deadline is established for Wednesday at noon for all amendments to be available and received. And that is something that I think will be further defined in the memo that's going to come on Monday. But there are, in all likelihood, it will dovetail with the way amendments are received now. It has to be a signed amendment by an author or received by an author, so it won't be a staff-submitted amendment. Then at 6 p.m. that day, amendments to those amendments have to be completed. And those are also submitted. On Thursday, we come in and there's the calendar for the day, and we have a defined universe of amendments. We can update some of those amendments for technical changes. You can go to the revisor on the side and say, I don't think my amendment engrosses anymore. Can you fix it? And they can fix it. One last step on the hypothetical. Suppose that the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar is carried forward. Someone makes a motion to carry these calendars forward. Under that hypothetical, the pre-filing period does not carry forward. It stays on that Wednesday. No new amendments are allowed, even though the bill has been carried forward to the next Monday. Suppose that the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar expire or not carry forward. Then the bill has to be recalendared. If it's recalendared, a new pre-filing deadline could be established. I'm going to move to the next rules now and leave that as I think, a fairly clear explanation of the pre-filing. It's not as bad as the stadium bill I had explained last year. So,
what are you thinking of, Mike?
The next.
Just a moment, Mr. McCormick, Representative Earhart, and members. If it would be all right with everybody, I'd like Mr. McCormick to walk us through, and then we can do questions.
I will have forgotten which becomes before the after. I am. But thank you.
Madam Chair, the next rule change is proposed House Rule 3.34, referral for corrections. Under this rule, the Speaker can, by announcement or the House by majority vote of the whole House, may refer a bill or resolution from the General Register, fiscal calendar, or calendar for the day to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration for the purposes of making changes to the bill. A bill so referred must be either further referred in consultation with the speaker to a standing committee with jurisdiction, or return to the general register within 5 days. If the committee on rules fails to act within 5 days, the bill is automatically referred to the general register. The next new rule is proposed rule 3.35 on duplicate amendments. An amendment to a bill offered on the House floor that exactly or substantially duplicates an amendment offered earlier on the floor and voted upon by the body in a given annual session is out of order for the remainder of that annual session, unless the Committee on Rules waives this rule with respect to a specific amendment. The next rule change of note happens actually several pages back on page 16. Currently, the House has a rule, Rule 4.05, which establishes limits on floor amendments in the instance where there is no adopted budget resolution. However, there is a loophole that had existed in that rule, and that loophole is that if a Senate file came over and the chair either adopted the Senate language on the Senate file or amended the House language back in on the Senate file, two things that happen all the time, that could be technically in a violation of Rule 4.05. And this happened last year, but no one raised the point of order on the floor. And this is a technical fix to make sure that in that instance, those normal motions are fine and do not violate 4.05, even though they may change the financial structure of the underlying bill somewhat. And this was brought to us by Chief Fiscal Officer Marks. The next change is on page 17, and it amends the rule 4.13, which deals with bills affecting state government powers and structures. Under the current rule, the requirement that a bill that changes the state government structure be automatically re-referred to the Government Operations Committee, that current rule does not apply to the major finance and revenue bills, and those are outlined in Rule 4.03. Those are just all the big normal omnibus spending bills. That exception to the rule is stricken. Instead, those bills also have to go to GovOps unless, as you'll see on page 18, unless the Committee on GovOps has already approved the bill or the substance of the matter that it would otherwise require a referral. Hypothetical, we have a new government commission to overview important matters, and it's never been heard before anywhere, and now it's included in the transportation bill. Under the old rule, because it was in the transportation omnibus bill, it would not have to go to government operations. Under this rule, it does have to go to government operations unless government operations has already approved a committee on important matters, and then it doesn't. The next new rule is on page 18, and you'll see we've established a new proposed rule 4.16. This parallels the government operations requirement, but only with respect to government data practices matters. Under this rule, the Committee on Civil Law has jurisdiction over House and Senate bills that substantially affect either Chapter 13 or other government data practices statutes. We've structured the rule to be similar to the new GovOps in that all the omnibus bills have to go to data practices if they do data practices matters, unless the Civil Law Committee has already approved the bill or substance of the matter. And the final change that I want to point out here is an extremely technical change that actually didn't get picked up in this version, so I just want to put the committee on notice that I have to reinstitute it. And that's on page 26, line 23. The intent was to strike the "but" and capitalize the word "the." And this is just an extremely technical change that was brought to us, and it didn't get picked up. So we can make that change on Monday if you like, Madam Chair. And those are the proposed changes to the rules.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. I would like Representative Pawlowski to talk a little bit about the process that was used a number of years ago that served as a foundation for this work. Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, members, starting in 2007, when I was the Chair of Government Operations, we invited the National Council of State Legislators to take a look at us in the spring of 2007 as we finished session and began to make recommendations on improvements that could be done in committee and on the House floor. Over 2007, Government Operations then began putting together material, and in 2008, there were 8 hearings of the Government Operations Committee, starting in April and finishing in August, with Mr. McCormick and the Revisor's Office, the House Research, Government Operations. I opened it up to any member, Republican or Democrat, who wanted to participate in the hearings, and we looked at a series of recommendations to improve procedures in committee and on the House floor that would facilitate an open process and also correct some problems that we had with sessions that went into actually almost 24 hours, and stresses on staff meaning the Revisor's Office and also House Research, in trying to complete material because technology had gotten ahead of us. Technology was moving faster than we were, and we weren't being able, and neither was House Research or the Revisor's Office, to comprehend what we were doing. Those recommendations, a few of them were put in place in 2009, and then when the House switched, I did meet with Representative Dean, and there was a discussion. The last 2 years, there were recommendations that were put in place that were also in that document about cutting down the number of committees, aligning the committees with the House and Senate, and a few other things. So what we're talking about here are a series of changes that were recommended starting in 2007 and 2008. They were done in a bipartisan committee, a standing committee of the House, not a working group. All testimony was recorded. There were 2 documents that were forwarded that are now in the library. There was a document by the entire committee, and then, of course, Representative Kahn had a minority report. I suggest you read the full document first before you go to Representative Kahn's. And those are, that's just a brief history of where the rule changes and suggestions have come from.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. And with that, I'd like to go to questions from the committee. And I'd like to begin with Representative Earhart. And please, you know, if you can turn off your phones. I have turned off mine. It just makes it really hard for the tape and for us to hear each other when that buzzing's going on. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I heard you say, but obviously I didn't because nobody else was had raised the point, but I thought you said that the amendments and the amendments to the amendments had to be in at the same time. You didn't say that. Then I quit right there.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hurt, the requirement is that the amendments have to be in at 12 noon the day prior to the bill being heard on the floor.
Yeah.
And that is paragraph A. And that the amendments to the amendments had to be filed 6 hours later, and that's paragraph E. And so that would be 6 p.m.
All right.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to understand how it would work remotely. So I'm not in the building, and we're going to, and I find out we're going to hear, say, Representative Dean's bill. And I've looked online, and now I see Representative Hortman has an amendment that I don't like, and I'd like to try to kill it somehow. So I'm trying to get in this amendment to the Hortman amendment to the Dean bill, let's say. Can I do this remotely?
Madam Chair.
Mr. McCormick.
Representative Lincheski, I think the answer will be yes. And I think the method that will be outlined will be that you would then request an amendment be drafted by the Revisor or House Research. We would draft that, and I'll give it to you electronically. And then you would submit that as Representative Lincheski electronically to an electronic submission site, which I think will be sent around to folks.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions, and one just kind of related to that piece. What happens? Does the time clock, does that start when we make the request to staff, or what happens in a situation for some whatever reason, maybe staff goes home and they're sick, you have sent in an email to them requesting that they do this amendment and somehow they don't get working on it and it's not submitted at time. What happens then? Is it just at the time that we submit the request to staff, or is it when staff actually submits it on your behalf when you made the request?
Representative Anderson, I believe that as members of the House, our amendments should be in our control, and we should be the people responsible for submitting them just as we are today. And so I think that if you submitted a request to the reviser or to House Research and you didn't hear anything back, it would be our responsibility, each of us, to question that and to make sure that the amendment was being drafted in the proper order so that we could submit it within time. And I'm going to look to Mr. McCormick to see if he has anything to add on that in terms of the process.
Madam Chair, members, House Research and the reviser will conduct a training of members and staff, but I think we'll be shifting a little bit our responsibilities to meet the new duties under this. And one of those is to make sure that our strong working relationship stays strong, and that, for example, if you submit to a House researcher who's going to be unavailable, that gets to the reviser. If the reviser needs backup, that something could come to House Research. And then in addition, I think we're going to make sure that there are folks like me who can take a request from any member and is available regardless of whether it's my topical area and make sure it gets assigned to other people. So we're going to try to make that our professional standard.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I'm just concerned that this is actually going to cause more work for staff as members try to track how this gets taken care of, making sure that amendments are put in on time, especially since there's the deadline that there is. And I'm just concerned about that piece of it. I'm also concerned about what kind of accommodations will we make for constituents that are hearing the bill debated on the House floor and they call in. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but I have on multiple occasions. Constituents calling, hey, I hear you're debating this bill on the floor. Have you thought about X, Y, and Z? What kind of accommodations do we have in place to respond to our constituents?
That's good.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, for the question. You know, I think that is an issue that we are actually trying to deal with this process, right? That too often, especially when we're meeting late into the evening, we're debating bills and we get an amendment that no one has seen before, and we can't really determine its impact because it's a brand new issue. We don't know its fiscal impact. We haven't been very thoughtful about it, and certainly if we're concerned about what it means to the people back home, if it's 10 or 11 o'clock at night, it is very difficult to figure that out. So first and foremost, you know, I believe that our work is going to be more thoughtful and deliberative if we're dealing with it in committee. I think most of us would agree with that. That's the place where our committee work needs to happen. If we get to the floor and we have the pre-filing amendment in place and we're debating a bill, and you get a call from a constituent, and there is a novel idea that hasn't been raised in any committee process, hasn't been raised through you know, the public's input through the committee process, or even by you as you've read through the bill and contemplated amendments, and there's an issue. We will move the committee, or we'll move the bill back to the Rules Committee so we can deal with it there, taking public testimony and allowing public input. The purpose of this rule really is to allow solid public input to make the process more transparent for Minnesotans in a place where Minnesotans don't have a lot of access on the floor, to make sure that we are being thoughtful and deliberative by making sure that the amendments are available to the public and to each of us, all of our amendments, to each of us available before we head to the floor. So we actually have time to think about what they mean, to think about what the bill means in the context of our own districts. And if we come across that rare, unusual circumstance, and I think it would be rare that we would come to the floor not prepared and not understanding what that bill means for our constituents, and we get a call from somebody, we have a means to deal with that as well.
Well, Madam Chair, I strongly disagree with your assessment. As I mentioned earlier, I've had several constituents contact me as we're debating issues on the House floor, concerned about different provisions and asking for my help. And I just see this as one more step of eliminating a person's voice to what's happening in our process. And I think that we need to really think seriously about limiting people's options to have their voice heard at the Capitol, because we already have enough people that are discouraged by the political process, and we don't need to further that. I just have one more question, and I know that there's others that probably have questions. What happens if a bill is introduced and it has blank appropriations? How are you as a member able to offer an amendment when we have a piece of legislation that comes to the floor with the appropriations left blank? How are we supposed to manage that? And if you're asking, you know, just so you know, that has happened in, I think it was in 2006, 2007. So how are you going to waive the rules in that situation, or how are you going to handle it?
Thanks, Representative Anderson. And members, I think we have seen too often bills coming to the floor with at times blank appropriations, or certainly, you know, fill in the blank waivers, or other large amendments that no one has had a chance to look at, and yet we're asked to vote for that. So it is my hope and my belief that those issues are going to be dealt with in committee before we get to the floor, so that there's time to get the bills into the shape that they need to before we debate them on the floor. And then Representative Hortman.
I just had a quick question. On page 12, lines 14 through 16, it says when an amendment is filed with the Speaker, then the Speaker must have the amendment posted on the House website as soon as practical. And I'm wondering, does that apply to both amendments and amendments to the amendments?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, it does.
You know, and
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I participated in the work group back in 2008 and the 8 meetings that Representative Pawlowski referred to. And one of the topics we repeatedly returned to in that process was how other states did it compared to how we did it, and how we were serving or not serving the public. And the issue of transparency was a big one that we focused on. The other thing that we learned was approximately 3/4 of the rest of the states have a 24-hour rule or very strict limitations on filing amendments. I don't know if this is true of everybody, but it was definitely true of me when I got here as a freshman. Was astonished that you could do things at the very last minute with no notice, with no public testimony, and that people were expected to respond whether it was 2 or 3 in the morning. So I think what I tried to find before I came down to this meeting was the information about the number of other states and what their procedures are. But I think on the NCSL website there is information about what other states do, and I think before we have to vote in this committee on these rules, that members should do a little research and find out where we fall on the spectrum, because I think you'll be surprised, as we were in the summer of 2008, learning how we were kind of the Wild West in terms of floor procedures compared to the vast majority of other states.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions, kind of procedural in nature, maybe for Mr. McCormick to start out, and then perhaps more of a general nature for the majority leader or for anyone from the Democrat caucus. Mr. McCormick, you kind of talk about a time clock that gets started for these amendments, and you talk about when we have a general register. This committee can pull from that general register bills to be placed on the calendar at any time we choose to meet. That precipitates floor action. This is the last place bills go, aside from the fiscal. When we're looking at that, it kind of presupposes that there's a calendar that we're marching things out 24, 48 hours ahead from committee action to the time when we're taking them up on the floor, when in practice it really doesn't work that way. Calendars, we put bills on the calendar, that list expands, it contracts, it can fall back, things go in different orders, and it's very fluid in nature. And there's a little bit of a disconnect there between how I think the bill as it is written intends for us to think about amendments and to prepare for the floor, and what might actually happen in practice because of the time delay in bills being on the calendar or moving around in priority in real effect. Can you talk about exactly this brief window when members in the minority, or the majority for that matter, can react to this with an amendment or an amendment to the amendment, about how that relates to our work from this committee and the fiscal calendar, placing those on that, and how we can react in real time, and then how we can correct that if situations change, you know, budgets change, other bills get passed, things happen all the time in real time, that I don't think this is going to, I think this really will create a lot of problems with the sequencing. Were you thinking about that? Were there questions about that from the people who are proposing this? How did those discussions take place?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, the clear requirement under this rule is that forethought be applied to the creation of the calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar if there is to be a pre-filing period. And that is made clear in the paragraph B, which says that you've got to know when you create the calendar for the day in advance what the version is, when it's going to come to the floor, and thereby calendar it in a manner that triggers a pre-filing requirement. If this committee, therefore, meets on a Monday or a Tuesday and we know that the tax bill is coming up on Thursday or the following Monday, we have the tools to calendar and trigger the pre-filing requirement. Suppose that the committee meets on a Monday and decides that we're going to do the tax bill on a Tuesday. In the rule, there are requirements that a certain number of days be available for members to, and if those days are not available, then the pre-filing requirement is waived. Under that situation, we can still calendar, or the bill can still be fiscal calendared for the very next day, but members can walk in and do their amendments on the floor as they do now while the bill's underway. So in order to make this pre-filing requirement work, the Rules Committee will have to, at least 2 days out, maybe more, know what the floor schedule is going to be and when the bills are going to come, and get the calendaring done in a sufficiently advanced time to allow the pre-filing period to be established.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick and Madam Chair. And I would assume that things happen, we have to meet deadlines. We are under strict deadlines, not just for committee deadlines, but for other things happening in the legislature where we have to move faster. And I would assume it would be the discretion of the presiding officer to waive the rules for pre-filing on the fly, as it were, on the floor. Is that correct? Is that the anticipation of the proposer?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, actually, I think it would be the discretion not of the presiding officer, but of either the fiscal chair, who would fiscally calendar it without sufficient time, or of the Rules Committee, which would establish a calendar for the day without sufficient time. And so in either of those instances, if you came to me and you said, there's consensus, we have to move this bill, and we have to move this bill tomorrow, or at the end of session later today, I would say, then we obviously don't have time for pre-filing. We're just going to have to put it on the calendar for the day in the Rules Committee and do it later today, or we're going to have Chair Lincheski put it on the fiscal calendar with 2 hours' notice, which can happen at the end of session, and just do it without a pre-filing period. Because if it has to move, the pre-filing period won't allow it to move.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those are just a couple of things I think that, you know, the committee should really consider before moving forward with this rule. Number one, from a member of the minority party who made it easier for the minority to propose and offer amendments when we took the majority, and now find myself back in the minority again. I've seen it from both sides a couple times, and I understand how this works. There's a majority and there's a minority, and the rules are designed primarily for the minority because of the way our system works, and I think that's a good system. I can tell you that, number one, if the intent of this rule is to limit the time, that will not work, just as the last gag rule did not work in limiting time, because, as Tip O'Neill said, the will of the body will find a way. Mm-hmm. It always does. It's like water pressure. So I think it's very important to think about unintended consequences when proposing such a rule. And I look at it now from the position of my colleagues in the minority. I'm very concerned that Dan Fabian, who has constituents in Hallock and Greenbush, who have a very different way of looking at life than people in Delwood and in North Oaks, has an equal shot at representing his district. And sometimes that doesn't always necessarily line up with my caucus. And we have to be very vigilant about including all of our representatives. So from a minority standpoint, we feel like we are not able to have our voices heard, because as a member, as in the minority, your primary job is to represent your constituents. And to offer amendments is your primary role. As a caucus, it's our primary role to offer opposition, but also alternatives. And amendments are extremely important and integral in doing that. But also, to the members of the majority, I would look at this and think hard about it from a majority standpoint, that we have regional differences, where when we look at the regional differences within the state, again, Representative Fabian's district and my district are about as far apart as you can get. And if leadership is pushing one direction, folks from a different part of the state might have a different opinion about that and want to be able to propose amendments. It's not just about the majority having an easier time of moving things through, and it's not about time management, but it's about every member being able to represent his or her district effectively. Being able to offer an amendment on the floor does so. You know, Eric Paulson, when he came from the House and went to Congress, said the thing that he missed most was in Minnesota, any member could get up at any time and offer an amendment to any bill and represent his district. And he said that's what was missing in Washington. And I think we should think very, very carefully about taking that ability away from folks here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Dean, and I'd just like to add my thinking to that. Mr. McCormick used the word forethought as he was describing the changes to the rules. And, you know, I think that that is a watchword for us and for this legislature. Minnesotans are expecting us to do our work and to do it deliberatively and thoughtfully and to do it transparently. And I think the floor has not always been the most transparent place, and when we are doing amendments at the last minute and drafting them to bills, and no one's had a chance to see them or consider them, I don't think we're necessarily rendering our most thoughtful and deliberative result. So forethought, I think, is the watchword for this. It is going to mean that we're going to have to prepare ahead of time, but I think Minnesotans expect us to do that. I do want to be clear that there is not a gag rule in this proposed amendment to the rules. There's no time limitation on our floor debate. There's no amendment limit, and there's no debate limit. And I think it's also important to note that we are treated, all of us, the same under this rule. And what we do with it and how we behave and how we interact with one another moving forward is up to us. I hope that the result of this, and certainly there are going to be changes to the way we do our work, but I hope that it makes us a more deliberative, more thoughtful, maybe just a little more humble and less dramatic body for a little while, and we can focus on the work of Minnesotans in doing that together, being treated fairly under the rules. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, listening to the discussion, there's a few comments that I'd like to make. And by the way, I call this 24-hour rule the sunshine in government rule. You know, there's been comments made about the role of the minority, but I think we also have to keep the public in mind. And with the 24-hour rule, the amendment will be posted. The public will have an opportunity to see what those amendments are. And in addition to that, I would point out that the author of the bill will be aware of what those amendments are and will have an opportunity to review them. And I'm going to use myself as an example here. I carried, when we were last in the majority, two of the major budget balancing bills. One of them had over 200 plus amendments, and if I recall correctly, not a single one of them had been shared with me as the author of the bill. There were a couple that had been offered earlier, but no one came forward. And when I was first elected, that was a common courtesy, regardless of which side of the aisle. If you were going to propose an amendment to a bill, you checked with the author. There were none. And if I recall, there were references in the paper about how research department, the nonpartisan research department, had had to work for hours and hours and hours in preparing those 200-plus amendments. There was quite a newspaper story about that whole issue. I had another bill, and it was near the end of the session, and I asked the majority leader about bringing the bill forward, and I said, I think we can dispense with this fairly quickly. I had checked at the desk. There were no amendments. We brought the bill forward, and all of a sudden there were 50 amendments, and they were still being drafted. Not one of them shared with me as the chief author. Well, I say that, not one of them shared with me, but none of them were shared with the general public either, and that's where the sunshine in government comes in. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the 6 hours that have come up, because some of us that were interested in the rulemaking process and have looked at some of these issues did ask staff, and we played with different hours, 4 hours, and maybe a couple of other different versions, and we arrived at 6 hours, but we did ask staff if that was adequate time for them to prepare the amendments, and the answer to that question was yes, that was a big enough window for them to prepare. But again, the sunshine in government. Those amendments to the amendments will be online. The author of the bill that will be before us will also have knowledge about the amendments and the amendments to the amendments. And the amendment to the amendment may not come from the author. That may be somebody else in the body that is interested for whatever reason proposing an amendment. So I really think that this is a good step forward. And I do want to address the blank appropriation question as well, because I chaired the Finance Committee, and I am not aware of a single bill that we ever reported out that didn't have the appropriation and a fiscal note. And there again, I'll use another example. I was going to hear the division report on the Health and Human Services bill. That's a very complicated area. The department wasn't able to meet our timeline to prepare the fiscal notes. And so we gave them additional time, and I think it ended up being the second to the last bill out of the committee, even though we wanted to address it earlier and get it up into conference committee because of the complexities of the bill. So we gave Cal Ludeman, who was the commissioner at the time under Governor Pawlenty, additional time to prepare the fiscal notes and so on, so that bill would be ready. Later, we actually, Lauren Solberg and I then met with Mr. Ludeman to see if they couldn't do something internally relative to the future to beef up that part of their department so that they could get fiscal notes prepared in a more timely manner. But I don't want to leave the impression that we didn't view fiscal notes as being important. We're in the majority now, and they're again going to be important from my perspective. And there will not be bills brought out on the House floor that are but blank appropriations. If that ever did happen, it's not to my knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions and then just an observation, and I don't know if it would best to go to you or to Mr. McCormick. So I'll just launch it, and whoever wants to take a stab. Could you go through for me how, once the pre-filing period has ended and everything's been filed, let's say it's a tax bill and there's lots and lots of amendments have been filed, and then second amendments, degree amendments as well, what does that filing mean with regards to how those amendments are taken up on the House floor? I mean, is there something in the rules that dictates it'll be in the order in which they were submitted? What about conflicting amendments, and then the second degree amendments, or maybe a number of those? How is that going to be sorted out and addressed on the House floor?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, a couple things to note. First of all, as is current custom and usage, the author of the amendment is in control of their own amendment and can at any point withdraw their amendment. If an author of the amendment pre-files an amendment, as is the current practice when an author of amendment files an amendment for the floor, that is taken up in the order as determined by the presiding officer, but they are all taken up. So if it's a filed amendment, it's not a hypothetical amendment. The member, if they don't withdraw it, will see it authored by the presiding officer. And then, as is the current practice, if you have the A1 amendment and there are 15 amendments to the A1 amendment, those would then be done in the context of the A1 amendment before the body. So,
thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. McCormick. So, if you're a member who submitted an amendment and you decide you want to temporarily withdraw it, and then maybe offer it later in the debate, would you still be allowed to do that with this rule change, Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, I don't see any reason why not. That's current practice. As long as it was successfully pre-filed, you could move to lay it on the table if the presiding officer, for some reason, had put it forward when you weren't ready.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. McCormick. So there won't be any correlation between when the amendments are filed and when they're taken up. Again, that would be at the discretion of the presiding officer or the speaker as to what amendments when, and that will follow as we know it today.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, that's how I read it.
Thank you.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a little experience at the federal level and how things operated and do in Washington, D.C., and when I first started in this body, it took a little getting used to, honestly, with regards to amendments coming up because at any moment because of the really strict structure federally. But I think sort of echoing what Representative Dean raised, there is a freedom and a sense of really having the ability to represent your constituency and being able to offer your amendments. And honestly, it doesn't necessarily work to only the advantage of the majority, the minority, but so much power is concentrated in what is offered and when that I do have some concerns about us going down this path. One of the committees that I've served on since I've joined the legislature has been Tax Committee, and I immensely enjoy it. And no matter who has been chair, it's been tradition, I think, that we really haven't had rules. I mean, members have been able to offer amendments whenever. There's no pre-filing requirements. And, when the Republicans took the majority 2 years ago, there was a little discussion about rules, and we decided again to not impose any 24-hour requirements others. And, Representative Lincheski, commented about that and said, we've kind of operated that way. And, when we were in the minority, there was no advance notice. When we were in the majority, there was no advance notice given to us by folks on the other side of the aisle. And you're just kind of required to look through it and talk about it and make your best judgments. And, part of working together as a body is building up a level of trust. And my concern is with this that it indicates a real lack of trust between the two parties in trying to work the people's will in the state of Minnesota. And I hope in trying to provide structure that, again, I think the idea of transparency for the public is a good thing. It's a very good thing. But there is a potential here for abuse that I think that really speaks to concerns about the level of trust between the majority and the minority. And I would just hope that this committee and members will think very carefully about that as we debate these rules changes, because if we can't establish some level of trust, the people are bringing amendments in good faith and representing their constituencies, we go down a very, very dangerous path.
Thank you, Representative Loon. And I just want to remind the committee members that
and I think this is so important, the rule, when adopted, will be applied to all of us equally. And what that means is that we can offer as many amendments as we want, any of us, and each of us, and they will be heard. But they will be noticed ahead of time, so the public can see them as well. We can all see them. The author can see them, which should make us a more deliberative and thoughtful body as a result. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to add my comments here to regarding the public input. I agree that this is enhancing that, or that's the way I view that. I think that's the most important part of this undertaking. And in trying to understand that further and making sure that I do, I would like to go back to a question that Representative Anderson S. raised regarding if we're on the floor and there's amendment, somebody, one of our constituents comes and they, you know, they're online and say, okay, this, there's something going on here, we missed it, and if there's something that's important that's happening, something substantive, and we have a constituent, you know, online, whatever, maybe they got us on our cell, we can deal with that? I mean, and how do we deal with that?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, under the situation in which a bill has been filed and calendared and there is a pre-filing amendment, the method to do that would be to take the bill and either move it to the Rules Committee, which is potentially available to the presiding officer, to the Speaker, actually, under Rule 3.34, or for the body to move that the bill be referred, either laid on the table or referred to committee for action on that amendment. And the third method is for the Rules Committee to meet and to either waive the pre-filing requirement or to extend the pre-filing requirement or otherwise change the pre-filing requirement. So you can halt the progress on the bill by laying it on the table. You can re-refer the bill either to Rules or to another committee. You can go to Rules Committee and waive the pre-filing requirement. Those are your options if in the moment the body decides that they really want to take up an amendment. What you can't do under this is file the amendment, which is a substantive amendment, and act on the amendment because it has not met the pre-filing requirement.
Representative Purcell.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And so if we do have that call, and we probably all had them, or an email about something, and we're on the floor with, you know, I'm talking about something we've pre-filed, we've been through the process here, and we're on the floor, and somebody says, uh-oh, we screwed up, and it's not necessarily technical. I don't know how that's getting defined, but something that, you know, substantive. We've got several different ways of dealing with that, and we...
Madam Chair, another way would be to suspend the rules with a two-thirds majority.
Thank you.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a couple of technical questions and then I guess an overall comment. But when you talked about, Mr. McCormick, recalendering bills and bills that have already had pre-filed amendments, do those amendments ride with the bill into the recalendar, or do those amendments have to be refiled?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, that's a nuance I think that we'll have a better answer for on Monday. My expectation would be that when you recalendar the bill that the amendments would carry forward, but I think I'd want to double check with the chief clerk and folks and get a better answer for you on Monday.
Okay.
Representative Woodard.
Well, and then thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a little bit different take on this being a sunshine. And as a second-term member of this body, and as somebody who had not been overly involved in politics before I decided to run for the first time, I have sort of a Pollyannish viewpoint of the session itself and the floor sessions. And I would tell you that, you know, even an amendment to an amendment sparks ideas on the House floor, that the reason we have House sessions is not just to rubber stamp or to move things forward in a predetermined manner, that we actually have live, honest debates that may influence people's opinions, may influence their ideas and thoughts on amendments, that it doesn't mean it's not a thoughtful amendment because it's a floor amendment. In fact, you know, we obviously do not serve on all committees. And so we do trust members of both sides to be asking the right questions in committee, to be pursuing each one of those bills as good committee work is. But there are times where new ideas come up on the floor because of the actual live, honest, open debate that occurs in a representative democracy. And for us not to have the ability to act upon those ideas and to have those thoughts debated through the amendment process on the floor, I do think actually limits the sunshine, limits the ability for us to represent our districts, and limits the ability for Minnesotans to really influence what we're doing. And so I would strongly encourage us to really, you know, you mentioned forethought, Madam Chair, to spend a lot of time thinking about the implications of this. And I was moved, too, by Representative Loon's comments about Washington, D.C. People do think that here in St. Paul that we don't get along, that there's too much arguing and not enough real open and honest debate that we talk past each other. And in Washington, D.C., who already has this rule, I would say that most people think that's tenfold, that it's much worse, that it's in fact created an even more divided government in Washington, D.C. than we have here in St. Paul because of this long, and I would call it progressive tradition we have in Minnesota that our forefathers gave us, the ability to really have these debates, to really represent and to listen on the House floor, to listen to people's thoughts and opinions, and have the ability to influence them as their representatives. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. Representative Hortman.
I know this is such a partisan environment that we're all used to looking at things through a partisan lens, but I would ask members of the minority to look at the proposed rule, just if you can take the partisan lens off and just see it as, would this rule improve our process? It doesn't limit any member. It just has that member taking those exact same actions with regard to drafting an amendment and thinking about a bill 24 hours ahead of time. And then it gives everybody else in the legislature the opportunity to read the amendment, discuss it with people. You can call. I've been in the retiring room calling my community college president saying, there's an amendment on the floor that says this. Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? It would give you that opportunity ahead of time to do that. And I've been an advocate of this rule since Representative Pawlowski had the hearings in 2008. And I even talked to Representative Dean when I was in the minority after you took over the majority and encouraged you to adopt this rule. So I think you can look at it through a partisan lens and you can say, oh, did they get in a room and say, how can we limit the minority? Or you can look at it from the standpoint of an institution that needs to change over time to get better and to be better for the public, and understand that there are people who strongly support this change in the rules for the reason that we believe that it's better for the public and without regard to who's in control.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, then I have some comments as well. Number one, it's my understanding that the rules state that Mr. McCormick, when you were talking about the kind of an example of how this might work, you had said that if the pre-filing deadline was noon on Wednesday, if the bill had been calendared, the bill needs to be calendared by noon on Tuesday, right? There's a 24-hour rule there as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then 3.34, the speaker can move a bill back to the, I should probably go to that page, talks about how the speaker can move a bill back to committee. And the question that I have is about, I need to just find it really quick, the speaker by announcement or the House by majority vote of the whole House may refer a bill or resolution from the general register, fiscal calendar, or calendar of the day to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration for the purpose of making changes to the bill. Is this a bill that's literally in front of the body for consideration?
Mr. McCormick?
The speaker could then zap the bill away from the body and send it back to committee?
Madam Chair, when a bill is being considered on the floor, it's on the calendar for the day and on the general register, and so I would say that the speaker can, by announcement, move that bill to the Rules Committee at that point.
So we literally are creating an environment with this rule where one member of our body can take a bill that's in front of the entire body without the consent of the body and move it to a committee. Just get rid of it. Gone. End debate, silence a minority, whatever. Just gone. Is that the intent of this rule?
Representative,
or is this an unintended consequence?
Representative Dowd and members, it is giving both the speaker or the House by a majority vote the ability to move a bill back to a rules committee so it can be heard and it can achieve the public testimony that we discussed earlier. Representative Dowd.
Thank you. Do you understand the scenario I'm laying out here, though? We've got, I think traditionally, and yes, I haven't been here very long, but I assume that we don't want rules that allow one member of the body to circumvent the will of the body. One member of the body can take a bill that's in front of the body for consideration. We could be offering amendments. We could be having debate. And instantly one member can take that and move it to a committee. Is that the kind of rule we want in our body?
Representative Dowd, the speaker by announcement or the House by a majority vote could do that, yes.
I just want to make sure everybody understands what we're doing here. I mean, this is taking away everybody's rights. The body itself. Now, I understand if the majority wants to make that decision. And I understand if you want to move it from, you know, one place to another, and I don't have a problem with the speaker doing that. But when a bill is in front of the body for consideration, and we're offering amendments and having debate, we can't have the ability of one of the members of that body to take a bill and just make it disappear. The body could vote to do that. The body can dispense with a bill, vote it down, vote it to committee, do whatever. But one member, I think that's, you know, I'm seeing here that this isn't an unintended consequence because you keep reading me the language as it's written. And I can read it too, but I want to make sure everybody understands that this is a pretty, you know, that's a pretty drastic change, I think, to what we've got now. Next one is lines, I think it's 4.9 to 4.12 on the additional pre-filing. Sorry, I'm jumping around here. In establishing the calendar for the day, the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration may establish additional pre-filing conditions which must be reported to the House. So my understanding here is this committee can put whatever additional requirements on pre-filing of amendments that it wants to at any time, as long as that then gets submitted, reported to the House.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, the answer is yes. So how that would work would be when the calendar for the day, how I'm presuming that would work, would be that the calendar for the day is established by this committee and is published to the House. It would include information about the pre-filing and is published to the House. It would include information about the pre-filing period. And I think we would attempt to communicate to the body when those deadlines were, for example. And then this committee could establish different deadlines or make other changes to the pre-filing as it chose. By vote of the committee.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The author's eyes must be blue. The, you know, can only be done on Tuesdays. Anything. This is open to whatever a majority of this committee decides.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, the legislature is bound by the Constitution, and the Rules Committee can't waive any element of how the Constitution says a bill must be passed into law. However, the Constitution gives the legislature the right to establish rules of operation and procedure. So I would try to make my answer within that context, Representative Dowd, that
anything
the committee
else?
Can do anything that doesn't waive an element of the Constitution.
Sure.
Representative Dowd.
Yeah, obviously, some other members of my caucus have spoken much more eloquently, probably, than I will be able to hear. But I, as well, have had, experiences where, impressions that I've had in the past or things that I thought were going to happen were much different than when I got there. And a few years ago, I traveled to Washington, D.C., as many of you, I'm sure, have. And I was literally in the Senate chamber and in the House chamber when both of those bodies in D.C. were in session and watched debates. You know what the biggest shock for me was? Nobody's there listening. Debate's happening, the TV cameras are rolling, and one guy is down on the floor, or one woman, representative or senator, is down on the floor, and nobody's listening. And the most interesting thing to me about our body and the way that we do business is we actually do stuff. And I'd ask every one of you to think about when you're standing on the floor trying to persuade people on your argument, don't you hope that people are listening? Don't you hope that people in that room are listening to what you're saying? I think that these rules, these rules very obviously make it easier for a majority to operate and make it more difficult for a minority. And I appreciate Representative Dean's comments about the rules are really to protect the rights of the minority. And I have 39,500 people that I represent, just like every one of you. And frankly, I'd like to be able to represent them in a way that, that I see fit. And I'd like to protect my right to offer an amendment and do some of the things that I need to do. And I understand that these things have been misused in the past, and I understand what we're trying to accomplish here. But we're really making it difficult on a minority and the rights of the minority. If somebody contacts you in the 24 hours prior to a bill hitting the floor, you can't offer an amendment unless the majority says it's okay. Madam Chair, you laid out a scenario where, we could send a bill back to committee, as long as the majority decides, or in this case, the Speaker decides. If you're in the minority, my citizens don't have a voice that gets to send a bill back to committee or add an amendment in less than 24 hours. You're silencing my voice and the voice of the person that my district elected to represent them here at the Capitol. So the other point that I'd like to make, I think we can all agree, this is a pretty big change to the way we've done business around here. I've heard things in this room today like we need to change the culture. I also heard things like we should be doing work in committee. And then I heard referenced hearings that happened on this back in 2008. One of the most disappointing things for me since I've been here is people don't listen on the floor like they should. And work doesn't happen in committee. We've had trouble this week with the exchange bill because notifications aren't going out soon enough, and I appreciate the majority's willingness to try to correct some of that. But committee is a place where you ask questions and you find out information. And then a bill moves to, but because of a 24-hour rule, you can't offer, after hearing something that might change your mind, or you might, uncover some bit of information that makes you want to change the bill or fix the bill, you can't offer an amendment based on that testimony. That silences the public's voice, okay? It silences their ability to participate in this process and actually have an effective outcome. Yes, they can come and testify, but don't you think they expect, just like I expected when I went to D.C., that there was going to be people in that chamber, that was going to be full? I know I'm a little naive, but, don't you think that, didn't you have that thought before you went to D.C.? Bet all those seats are full and everybody's going to be listening to that person. Nope, on TV you just see that one guy and, a couple of empty seats behind him. 15 people in the chamber, 435 members, 15 people in the chamber listening to debate. They're just talking to the TV. Nobody's listening. All the decisions are made before they get to the floor. And that's what's going to happen under these rules. Your caucus is going to tell you how to vote before you get there. Nobody's going to listen on the floor. And we're moving closer and closer and closer to Washington, D.C. Ask the people in your district. Ask them if they think things function well in D.C. They're polling information to show you that, no, people don't think that D.C. runs very well. Okay? And I know that things don't run here as well as they could or should, but Representative Loon's point, excuse me, is valid. The reason they don't is because we haven't had an environment of trust. Rules like this don't help gain an environment where we're going to have trust. Okay? This is perceived by the minority as silencing them, and by our constituents as silencing them. What we need is more participation here at the Capitol, not less. We need more people listening on the floor, not less. And when our constituents come and sit here at these committee tables, we need more members listening to them, not less. And the ability to offer an amendment once you've heard what they've said, not rules that restrict that from happening. And yes, we can waive them if the majority wants to, not if the minority wants to. So the minority gets weakened and the majority gets strengthened under these rules. Do these help us? Representative Dean's point was valid. You think you're going to have shorter floor sessions because of these rules? Water always finds the lowest point, and it will through these rules. We're all strategists, and we'll all figure out a way to do whatever it is we think we need to do on the floor. But what it doesn't do is build trust. So I would ask everybody to think really long and really hard before we take these drastic changes. And you're wondering, well, what do you mean? You know, they had these committee hearings. I don't know when everybody was elected here, but there's a large number of people in this room that weren't here in 2007 or 2008, and I'm one of them. And if we're going to make big changes to the rules of the way this place operates and the culture of this body, why don't we do the work, Madam Chair, that you just said should be done in committee? Why don't we bring those people back in and have that discussion and together, as a majority and a minority, work out rules that are going to help everybody? Let's really fix the culture here. Let's not slam something through. Let's have those hearings. I think that sounds like a great idea. Let's bring those people in and let's do work in these committees. Our people at home think that we do, just like I thought people would be listening in D.C. So I appreciate, I apologize for pontificating a little bit, but this is a major culture change. And everybody, minority, majority, you know, I offer up that I'm willing to talk to anybody about this stuff, to talk about what's better for this body, anytime, anywhere. But ramming this stuff through without working on it in committee, without taking real input from the minority and from the general public, you know, now you're even, you know, restricting our ability to offer amendments right up until the day that we take this up, and that's fine, whatever. I'm not worried about it. But let's really work, and let's do what Jennifer Loon said that we should do. Let's build an environment of trust here. That'll improve the culture, not screw in the minority. So think about it.
Representative Doubt, you know, I can't in strong enough terms reject the notion that this is about screwing the minority. I don't like that word very much, but just to quote air quotes around that. You know, we go to the floor and we have our debates. And we've had a lot of good debates on the floor, and some mistakes have been made on the floor. And people have been surprised by amendments on the floor, and we can't figure out what the fiscal impact of those amendments mean or what they mean to the people at home. And what this amendment does is ask us not to limit the debate of anybody, not to limit the amendments, not to limit the time, not to gag the minority, but instead to bring thought into the debate on the floor, which I think Minnesotans want and appreciate. There is value in being able to read the bills ahead of time, to think about the amendments ahead of time, and to prepare the debate. It will be a more thoughtful debate. And that is a good government strategy. A more thoughtful debate where we can all participate together, engaging together, not in some sort of prefab way, as you're describing, but instead a real debate where we've had a chance to think and consider what's coming before us, so the author can consider what's coming before them
on a bill. We will be more thoughtful, we will be more deliberative, and it will result in a better outcome for Minnesotans. I think that's what they expect of us. I don't think that they expect that we'll be on the floor at 10 o'clock at night being surprised by amendments. I think they want us to be prepared, and I think they want us to be thoughtful. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, first, Representative Dowd, I want to take exception with people not working in committee. Maybe some folks don't work in committee, but for the most part, I work very hard in committee, and I expect that other representatives will work hard in committee and bring forward their amendments and their issues with bills. And I believe that this is the people's body, and that we have a responsibility to let the public know what it is that we're talking about. And amendments that show up in the middle of the night, we hear all sorts of politicians talking about surprises in the dark of night. This is about the people's house and allowing the people to have an opportunity to give input. In my 13 years in the legislatures, I have seen many mistakes that have been made based on amendments that people thought this was going to be the consequence. And then you find out, after the legislature's gone home, that a mistake happened and you have to get the Senate majority leader and the speaker and the governor to come up with a letter to say, we're not going to enforce that part of the law because, oops. We've all seen mistakes, and this is the people's body, and we have a responsibility to let the people see the work that we're doing and give comments. And if there is an idea, Representative Woodard, that you come up with after getting a call from your constituent, there is nothing keeping you from introducing a bill and going through the committee process. This is a two-year legislative process, and you can introduce a bill.
Representative Ward.
Just taking a little breath, Madam Chair, because I know that others want to comment on some of the comments that have been made. Besides trust, respect is another word that we need to practice around here. And I'm going to, Representative Moon, I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I've changed a few of the comments that I was going to say earlier, but I want to go back to Representative Pawlowski. Representative Pawlowski, for years, has been trying to improve the culture of this body. For years. And I salute him for that. And he has worked with Republicans and Democrats in a passionate way to try to improve the culture of this body and to have us run our business in a respectful, trustful, honorable manner. And Representative Pawlowski, you have not given up. I would have given up a long time ago, but you haven't, and I applaud that. And, you know, Representative Dowd, you said there's, you know, some valid points made by members of your caucus. There's been valid points made by every member here today. And we continue to make good, valid points. And I want to, you know, Representative Hortman talked a little bit about, you know, let's take off the partisan glasses and let's look through this and let's really look at what this is all about. And, you know, change is difficult for a lot of us. Maybe not for some of you, but for me, change is difficult. And for most human beings, change is difficult. And Representative Dalt, you said this is substantive change. This is big change. And it is. It is big change. And we're having good debate and dialogue about that. Representative Pawlowski is saying, have been saying for years, we need to change, members. And we need to change because this isn't about us. I kind of hear a lot of dialogue about, you know, but what about, you know, us? And Representative Hortman made the reference to it. Representative Hillstrom. And others have made the reference to this is about the people. This is not about us. This is about the people and transparency and accountability in how we do our business, members. And I've heard you say, from the friends from the other side of the aisle and my colleagues on my side of the aisle, many of you said during the campaign, when you went door knocking, I've heard you say, people made these comments, why can't you just get along and get things done? Why can't you respect each other? Why can't you trust each other? Why do you wait until the final minute to get things done? Did we not all hear that? Yes, we have all heard that, because I've heard it referenced many, many times. And members, in my opinion, this is an attempt to really try to address all of that, because this is not about us. This is about the public and how we operate and how we get our business done here with transparency, accountability, trust and respect with each other. And Representative Lewin, I have gotten to know you and sit by you in a couple different committees last year, not this year, but I always admire every time you say something because it's accurate and true. And trust is a thing, and respect is a thing that we need to build in this body, not in a partisan way, but in a bipartisan, nonpartisan way of trusting and respecting each other, knowing that change is needed. But trust and respect, my friends, is earned. And it should be earned. When I ran my classroom, my students just didn't trust and respect Mr. Ward right off the bat. My kids and my wife just don't trust dad and husband. It's an earned characteristic of life. And it's earned by our actions. Not necessarily what we speak, but by what we show. Members, I'm saying to you, let's try this. Let's show that we can change and be better people for our people, because we do trust and respect each other, and we'll show that.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Mr. McCormick, I'm interested in offering some amendments to try to improve this. And those are due tomorrow?
Madam Chair, I think according to the new committee rules, 5 o'clock tomorrow, they have to be into the committee. I'll let Jessica Nyman.
All right. And I'm just trying to figure out how we can try to make this a little bit better. Let's say Representative Lilly introduces House File 1. It's put on the General Register, it is calendared, and it starts the clock. It has several amendments offered to it, let's say 101 through 105. I look at those, and there's some amendments to the amendments that are posted. I don't offer an amendment. I don't offer an amendment to the amendment. The House takes up the bill, Lilly, House File 1, with amendments 101 to 105. Are amendments divisible within this context?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, yes, they are.
All right. Madam Chair, Mr. McCormick.
Mr.
So let's say Representative Lilly's bill to do a tax cut for the richest 1%. folks don't like that. They offer several amendments to the amendment. Let's say that Amendment 101 is offered, divided. It's divided into two. Side A passes, side B fails, 102 fails, 103 fails, 104 passes, but I want to go back. Now that 104 passes, I don't like the fact that A of 101 failed, and I want to bring that up. If we were on the House floor, I could just zoom back, have a quick amendment made, get some members of my caucus to sign it. I might run across. I might know that this is really, really good for Representative Lincheski's district, and she's going to want to sign on to this because I know her district is pretty much like my district, and we get a little core together, and we go, okay, you know, 101 went down. We need to bring back 101B. I've seen this happen, and it makes bills better. I can't do that under the current rules, the way that they are written now. If I were to write an amendment so that I wanted to be able to do that, what would that say?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, I would probably put together for you a series of options, and they might include the ability to offer an amendment with unanimous consent of the body, or the ability to offer an amendment with a majority of the whole body. And in those two instances, you would come in with your 101B, and you'd say, I'm asking for unanimous consent, or I'm asking for a consent of the body to offer the 101B amendment. If you gain that consent, either unanimous or majority, then you would have the right to offer the amendment. The reason I would offer the two levels, unanimous consent and majority of the body, is that those are easily administratable. We know how to deal with them on the floor. There could be a third level where you say, with the consent of 30 members by subscription, generally think that's messy, but I suppose you could create an alternative like that where that's possible, where if you could show the signature of 30 members, you could offer an amendment. Those would be the three that I'd throw out right away for you, Representative Dean, as possible modifications. I'm sure if I talked to Mark Shepard, I'd have 12 to 15 more ideas to throw out for you. But
well, I'll try to grab you tomorrow. Madam Speaker and representatives, this just brings up the kind of the two problems with the mechanics of the bill, why I think this doesn't work and won't work well for us when we try to enact this, if we indeed do vote to move this out of committee and off the floor. I think it's bad for the majority. I think it's bad for the minority in particular. But it's bad for the House. It prevents Minnesota from doing things in a way that might be messy sometimes. It might not look clean. It might not always appear that we're getting along as well, but it produces a better product when we can do things in a way that allows us to represent our constituents. And again, when we're looking at the differences between the majority and the minority, it is for everyone, but the rules are clearly set for the majority with reference to the minority. You control the calendar. You control which bills come up. You control the order in the amendments come up, in how they come up, and when bills can be heard and when they can't, and when they can be shot back to committee. So that although we say that the rules are evenly, that they apply to everyone, they are there to protect the minority, but they definitely are not applied equal to the minority or the majority. And I think that's okay. I think that when Minnesota picks a majority, that's the way we've chosen to run our government, and it works. Not always the way we like it, but it does. And I can tell you that when we came in 2 years ago, the rule limiting debate was hotly debated within our caucus. They said, heck yeah, we're going to keep that because we're going to shut down debate. We want to keep that tool for the majority to control the minority. And the argument from our caucus was, don't limit debate because we believe that our ideas are better. Put them out in the public. Let's hear every single idea. If our ideas aren't better, then we're going to lose. So let's hear every idea. We're not afraid of any amendments. We're not afraid of any ideas from the minority party. If we truly think our ideas are better, let's hear them all and we'll prevail. Or not. That produces a better product. I think that that's the right way to look at it, and I think it's the fair way to look at it. And in 2 years from now, if the minorities and the majorities are switched, this is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that I'm not going to be able to have that argument in my caucus, that they'll say, well, we fixed it for the minority last time, we made things easier for the minority when we got into the majority. They got into the majority, and then look what happened. That's going to be a tougher argument for some of us to make. So I just think we ought to be very clear about the long-term effects of rules and the unintended consequences down the road. Because, as is pointed out, long debates are not as good as short debates, but sometimes they're necessary. And on-the-fly amendments are not as good as ones that we can all look at in advance, but many times they're necessary. And I sat next to Representative Detmer on the floor. He was going to vote no on a bill. I talked through him on the bill. I said that I had an amendment that I was cooking up in the back. He liked it so much, he offered the amendment on the floor, improved the bill. the amendment was voted on, and he voted for the bill. That's the way things should be able to work in real time, whether you're in the minority or in the majority, and that's what this prevents.
Thank you, Representative Dean. I think the way the minority feels like it's being treated is sometimes in the eye of the beholder. So I just want to say that part. And to your point about bills being able to withstand the voice of the minority, I think that's true for amendments as well. Both should be strong enough to withstand our debate and to withstand our thoughtful debate in preparation ahead of time. Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I've been a member of the legislature now for 6 years, but I also have been watching what happens politically in the national scene. And the problems that were discussed about the Congress of the United States, in my opinion, has begun to seep and has already seeped into the deliberations here in our legislature. Maybe because I was a school teacher and had only a couple of classroom rules, one of them was that you should try to respect everyone. When I have been observing that even here in our state, and it happened in my political party, for a while I dropped out of politics because I felt my political party had become too ideological and certain persons would get kind of purged out, and so my party learned that that's not the way you win elections if you get too narrowly based. And that happens to political parties. We can maybe blame it on the primary system or the caucus system or the general public who do not participate in large enough numbers so that we get a very narrow spectrum in either of the two political parties, and that narrow spectrum are the ones who have the power to determine who gets to be the nominee for their political party. I think that is one of the reasons that we have seen things such as Representative Carlson's discussion of 200 amendments being put on the floor. That's done to satisfy those people in the party who hold the key to your political future. And that's been one of the things that has caused a change in culture here in this legislature, and I don't think anyone should assume there has not been over the last 10 or 20 years, and I've only been here six. I used to watch pretty carefully since I taught government and politics in my school, and I've always been interested in politics, that there has been a coarsening of the political dialogue and the process here in Minnesota as well as in the country at large. So that leads me to a request, I guess. Since there was a discussion about, well, the standing committee that Representative Pawlowski had run took place a number of years ago, maybe we should revive it all. And I'd just like to remind everyone that there is such a thing as the written word as well. That report is there for all of us to read. It has been there. And before we recreate the wheel again, why don't we read that and see what the testimony was? And if that isn't sufficient, maybe right now would not be the appropriate time, Madam Chair, but I think it would be very useful if we asked staff who've been here a long time, or Representative Carlson, or Representative Pawlowski, or someone on the Republican side who have been here many years and have seen how the House has run in the past, to give us a little primer on what it was like then. Because I think there's a notion that somehow everything has been going along hunky-dory these last few years, and all of a sudden there's this strange need to make these radical changes. I think the radical changes have already taken place. Now, I was a history teacher, and I have respect for the past, for the lessons of the past. And I think many of our colleagues who experienced what it was in a more gentle and decent time here in the House could give us more instruction. Maybe we should ask Representative Pawlowski to give us a little more detail on who it was that came in and testified, and a little more detail on what is happening in other states that are moving their agendas more efficiently and democratically, that's a small d, than we are. Because there is a real caustic atmosphere in this legislature. There are people who say, I don't care what the bill is, if it's being proposed by the opposition, I'm going to vote against it. We're all going to vote against it. That's our objective. Why? Partly because each of us in our parties, when we're in the minority, want to regain the majority. The other reason is we've got those people back home watching who, if we are not as nasty as we can be, are going to purge us. We've had purging in this House of Representatives already. So, Madam Chair, I think it would be useful, maybe not now or maybe the next time we meet, that we do have a little primer from Representative Pawlowski, from Representative Carlson, from someone in the Republican caucus who have had long experience here, to really show us what it was before this caustic atmosphere, and that's how I see it, developed. This is not the best of all possible worlds, ladies and gentlemen. We could do a hell of a lot better than we used to in the past. At least that's my opinion.
Thank you, Representative Benson. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a real quick question. And Representative Hillstrom had advised that if we weren't able to do an amendment, we could always introduce a bill. But part of the new language under 1.10 is that the Committee on Rules will actually be able to provide a deadline for introduction of bills. I just want to clarify that, that I wouldn't be able to introduce a bill at any time as I am now, that there will be a deadline put together by the Rules Committee on when I can introduce a bill and when I can't. Just to clarify, is that correct, Mr. McCormick?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, yes, if the Rules Committee adopts a deadline for bill introduction, then no bills will be introduced after that deadline.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In my opinion, our job is to effectively serve the public, and I think we can clearly do that best in a way that's transparent, in a way that's well-organized, in a way that's thoughtful. The paradigm that's being suggested here is one that's followed by apparently the vast majority of states, so it's hardly a radical notion. So I heartily endorse it because, again, our job is to make things work better for the public, and I think this kind of transparency and this kind of thoughtfulness will make it happen. So thank you for that.
Representative Anderson S.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Woodard. I'm glad you brought up that issue because that was one of the concerns that I have, and I'd like a little bit more clarification, Madam Chair, of what are you thinking timeline for stopping bill introductions? What date are you looking at or thinking about?
Thank you, Representative Anderson and members. The reason why that language is in the proposed rules and it is permissive is to be able to contemplate ending the process of bill introduction so that our staff can focus their time on the work of the legislature in preparing omnibus bills and doing the work of the very end of the legislature. So it is a permissive option for us to consider. It is in a nod or an effort to recognize that the staff at the end of the session are working very, very hard to do the work of the people and do the work of the legislature. And we will contemplate that date if necessary.
Madam Chair, can you tell me, we operate off of a biennial basis. So typically, if your bill doesn't make it through the committee process, then it goes to the next legislative session. So a lot of times members say, you know, I'm not ready to maybe, or didn't get a bill heard that year, or they have an idea that comes late. Are you saying that we wouldn't be able to introduce a bill then, say we have a bill in March or April, even though the next legislative session we'd still be able to take up that bill?
Representative Anderson, I'm saying that it is a permissive rule. The Rules Committee would set that deadline. I would contemplate that being toward the end of the session when our staff are working very, very hard
at the end of the session, preparing omnibus bills that constitute the budget and the last bits of work of this legislative session. I also know that it's possible for the legislature to create filing periods when we're not in session. We've done that in the past, and we'd be able to do that again. And finally, the Rules Committee can certainly contemplate changing or accepting a bill introduction that's necessary to meet the demands of the state of Minnesota. Say there is an emergency or a flood that happens, then we would be able to do that as well. So there's plenty of opportunity for the legislature to be able to react to the changing needs that we're facing in a state, and opportunity for members to get bills introduced during this legislative session, during the next legislative session, and during interim filing windows that we can establish that have been established in the past by the Republicans when they were in the majority and the Democrats when they've been in the majority.
So, Madam Chair, it is possible that you and the majority could potentially put a deadline on when bills could be introduced that would prohibit the minority from, say, for example, responding to the budget forecast in February.
Representative Anderson, I suppose anything is possible, but that's certainly not our intention. It's a permissive rule, and it is in place in order for us to make sure that our staff, in respect for their time, are able to focus their efforts at the end of session on doing the work of the legislature so we can finish.
Okay. And just one last comment. You know, Madam Chair, I think it's kind of interesting. We are approaching 6 o'clock. We're now going to have less than 24 hours advance notice in order to put together amendments to give to staff for your committee on these rules. Just something to think about.
Representative Anderson, I would be happy to extend that window to 6 p.m. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Are there any other comments? Well, I would thank you then for a respectful dialogue. I look forward to continuing that. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.